You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacers fans, welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we are going to have an awesome three-episode week unexpectedly in the middle of August. As always, I am one of your co-hosts of the show, Tony East. And on the other line, I was finally able to find him after we both had our busy weekends, is Adam Friedman over at Indy Cornrows. Adam, what's up, man?
I mean, I found you.
Ooh, you did find me, even though I am hosting today.
I'm the one who's been available since Sunday.
You are correct.
I wasn't available Sunday. Whatever. But I've been available.
I haven't been available since like Friday at 4 p.m. So I understand it is my fault.
you got a busy weekend. It's fine. Middle of August, it's not like there's been a ton of content. It's not like we're in the middle of some 5-game homestead for the Pacers or something like that, or some 4-game five nights.
Thank you to the Lakers Legacy Pod for allowing us to get a Monday show out.
Yeah,
exactly. That was really nice of them. But like I teased in my 2-minute preview of that episode, that I was able to find time to do at like 1 a.m. yesterday. We are going to talk about the schedule and the over-under. We meant to talk about the over-under right after it came out, and then the schedule came out last week, so we wanted to talk about that. So I'm glad we were able to get together and do a show. And I would like to start with the schedule because it kind of could influence your over-under answer.
That's fair.
You know, I didn't think about it until I literally just said that sentence out loud.
I did in our pre-show. That's why I said we should do the schedule the over-under last.
Well, that's interesting.
I wish you said your reason.
Look at you. So they play 82 games. Can you believe it? Miller Time Pod nailed it. 41 at home, 41 on the road. But I would say the things that make a schedule hard, the Pacers don't have many of those things.
Yeah, they have some weird stretches in here. But I think what was last year, they played 5 back-to-backs in their first month before December. Yep. They only have 4 this time. They don't have as tough a schedule to start the year. I think that was a big reason why they started 21-21 in that run, because they hit kind of a sweet spot in January and February where the schedule kind of actually lightened up a little bit. Obviously, things can change too, because you just like, I think at one point we thought Detroit would be a playoff team and then ended up not being a playoff team, and that kind of influenced the way we viewed the first half schedule. But also, the biggest thing is LeBron going to LA even eases up on at least 2 of their games against Cleveland, because they play Cleveland 4 times, which also will be cakewalks.
As a whole, the division is probably a little easier. I mean, Detroit didn't get a ton better. Milwaukee didn't get a ton better. Chicago didn't get a ton better. And Cleveland got way worse.
Oh, so, it's way worse than last year, for sure.
So those 16 games, probably they'll gain a win or two from those. And then the rest of the schedule is the part that's different every year. But last year, you know, they had that road trip with Utah back-to-back in Portland, and then they went to the LAs, and Sacramento is like 6 or 7 games. They don't have a long Western road trip, which I usually think is the hardest part of the schedule.
Which is odd, because they went, 4-2 in the West Coast swing last year, right?
Yeah. Brutal. They do well on that trip. But I think of those long trips, like when the Warriors started that one season, though, the season they won 73 games, like 28 or 29, I can't remember how many they won to start the year. But their first loss was the last game of their East Coast road. So the Pacers not having a really long West Coast road trip is super nice.
Yeah. They have basically 2 mini ones. They have a 4-game one in December. Yep. And then they would have another 4-gamer at the end. Is it in March? Yeah, it's in March. Mid-March. They have another 4-game. Both of them are kind of – the March one is probably going to be really difficult because it's probably 4 semi-playoff teams. But the first one – I mean, I guess the Lakers aren't a playoff team, but you're thinking you're playing Sacramento and Phoenix, who are pretty bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Still be bad.
The hardest portion of their schedule is at the end of March. I don't have it in front of me. I wish I should.
I do. I know what you're talking about. They have a stretch, and
I wish I had it. I'll look for it if I can find it really fast. But yeah, OKC's in there. Denver's in there twice. I think Utah's in there. They really have one easy game. It should be their home. It's Orlando, but it's a back to back. You know, so it's not as easy as it sounds.
So, actually, I think their hardest stretch is in November when they go Boston, Houston, Philly, Miami, Houston, Miami. So, that's 6 teams who all made the playoffs last year, 6 teams who probably didn't get worse, and they're playing them. That's a pretty brutal stretch.
November, that's some place for it.
Yeah. That's their worst stretch.
I found mine. I think they're about the same, to be honest. This is March 16th through March 30th, okay? Oh, geez. It went back to the top of the calendar. Come on.
Okay, I have it for you. It's Denver, Portland, L.A., Golden State,
at Denver, at Portland, then a back-to-back in L.A., then at Golden State, home for Denver, then at Oklahoma City, at Boston, then a back-to-back with Orlando. All travel in between every game. That's hard.
Yeah, that's going to be pretty brutal.
That'll be the hardest part, I think. That November stretch is really tough, though.
It actually, I mean, I guess it depends on how good the Clippers are. Clippers could go a couple ways. Yeah, we don't know.
They could be tanking at that point.
And I guess it depends how good Denver is. I mean, I guess we think they're going to be good, but injuries and stuff like that.
Is this the second year in a row? No, never mind. Never mind. I thought they played Denver twice at the end of the year last year, but that was wrong. I forget who it was. It was the Clippers Golden last State. Year. They played both times in March and Golden State, yeah.
Yeah, they had a weirdly unbalanced schedule. Remember, they played Detroit four times before the end of the year.
Yeah,
they played Houston. They did that again. They played Houston basically in the first month twice.
Yeah,
there's not any of those weird quirks. I don't think. I mean, I think they played Atlanta three times before the end of the year, and they played in the last game of the season. But there's nothing too odd about this schedule, at least.
14 back to backs. The average is a little over 13. I think that's fine. They had 13 last year, right? I think so.
I think 13 or 14.
About the same. Those only suck if you host a podcast, so whatever. And then Kevin Pelton did his old projectamundos. They have the 25th hardest schedule, a.k.a. the 6th easiest schedule. Based on last year's record, they have the same thing, 25th toughest schedule. So that is good.
But doesn't it end up not mattering because three of the – well, I think it's Philadelphia, Toronto, Milwaukee have a – and Washington all have easier schedules. So really like four playoff teams have an easier schedule. And also you factor in that some team might pop that it will make it
good teams in the East that have easy schedules because they don't play themselves, but they still play the crappy East teams a bunch.
Yeah, I guess Boston has the hardest schedule of like the good East teams, I would say. And I don't know why. Maybe because they have played Toronto probably four times.
Got unlucky with like who they played three times.
They probably played Toronto four times. It's probably the difference.
Yeah, that's true. Yep. But the other thing, I can't find it, unfortunately. They have the third lowest total travel. Oh, there it is. Third least miles traveled this coming season. That's a thing that happens every year just because they're in the Central Division in general. Cleveland's right below them. Detroit, Milwaukee, and Chicago are the three right above them. So, you know, being in the division is really nice where it is, but that's still really good for them.
Well, and it's the fact that they're basically in the heart of love NBA teams are the heart of where most NBA teams are. I mean, most there's, I think, what, 20 of the teams are, I think it's, maybe it's 18 or east of the Mississippi River, basically, if you can't. New Orleans, Memphis, and Minnesota in the east, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not, all of this that we've just said to say, it's really not that bad. And to ice the cake of it not being that bad is they get to play on national TV 12 times, which is pretty cool.
And this is the biggest thing, because I think when the, you know, big national days like the Christmas Day games, opening week games, and the MLK Day was released. The Patriots had none of those games. But then when this came out, I think they have what? I'm trying to even on six on – they have seven on nine on ESPN and three on TNT, which is about even with the way Toronto who has – or with Toronto and who has, I think, 15 national games. They have 12 similar kind of team market-wise. And then take Utah, who is – basically, a similar market size in the West. They play Utah play 11 national TV games, so they end up playing about the average for a playoff team at their seating, who has the not quite the on the level like superstar TV drag kind of guy.
Yeah, they got some interesting national TV games too. They got the Timberwolves on TNT. I don't know how Timberwolves Pacers made it to national TV, but I cannot complain about that. That'll be fun. They got the Sixers four times. That rivalry is absolutely brewing. They got the Thunder again. Can't wait to see more Paul George versus Vic on primetime television. They got the Bucks a few times, so you get to see some Giannis. Yeah, it'll just be awesome. A good time. And the Celtics, like the last game of the season. Could be a fight for the playoff standings.
Yeah, so that's the one thing. So, too, is you look at the last, I think you look at the last seven games, two are against Boston. And if it's a tight playoff race for a seeding, that could be the difference. Those two of the last seven games, and they especially against Brooklyn, Atlanta, which will help gain some more wins too.
I'm glad. Yeah, I couldn't find a time to fit that in the discussion around, but I am glad. Like last year, they closed out with Charlotte, who was tanking, so they could easily cement their playoff position before they tanked in their last game. and rested everybody. You know, that could be a similar situation this year, which could be really nice.
Yeah, and I guess, I mean, depends on how much we value Detroit. They play them twice too at the end of the year in April. So I think Detroit will be about the same they were last year, 38, 39 wins. So it won't really matter, I don't think, but it could.
Right. Yeah. If they're trying for the playoffs, who knows
what they got to be. The Pacers could get a lot harder if Detroit's becoming like a 45 win team next year. That's
right.
That's the difference. They played them four times. So it's 24 extra wins that they didn't have last year.
Yep.
Which it's not like unreasonable. Detroit has Blake Griffin, Drummond, and a healthy Reggie Jackson. That's like a decent team in an East that's pretty weak at this moment.
Yeah. The longest road trip in the schedule is 5 games, and it's at Bulls, at Raptors, at Cavs, at Celtics, at Knicks. That could be 3 wins on the longest road trip. That's a good thing.
And then it's followed up by, isn't it followed by a 5-game homestand too?
Yeah, it is.
It's weird. They have that 5-game road trip, 5-game homestand, and then a 3-game road trip too in February.
Yeah, it's super bizarre. It is. Now, homestand's pretty easy. The homestand's pretty easy too. It's got Phoenix, Dallas, and Charlotte in there.
Yeah, and then they have a 4-game road stand right after that.
Yep.
With a 5-game homestand. Like they have these weird like stretch where they don't rotate a lot. It's like a lot of straight at home and a lot of straight at the road, which is, I don't know if it's good or a bad thing, I guess. Depends on what you're traveling.
Yeah, January is going to be bizarre, but that's part of the least miles traveled stuff. That works out. The other last thing, I've had like 30 of these, is that Lance's return to Banker's Life is February 5th, 2019.
Which means, for all we know, he could already be back in Banker's Life by December.
The trade deadline's February 7th, so he could be getting off the plane to stay around then, right, when they dump him back.
Yeah, so they play the Lakers at 29, so we'll get to play the Pacers once probably, but who knows, right? I don't think he – was Charlotte – did he even make it to the second time they played Charlotte at home?
I have no idea. They just waved him.
I don't think he did. I think he came back with Memphis one time, but I think that was it. Yeah,
that's crazy.
I mean, if he has a bad start for 2 months, he's out there. I mean, like, that team that team is not really going to mess around, I don't think, with LeBron there. It's, if he's not fitting in, he's gone.
Yeah, it's going to be very, very interesting discussion about that. VR3 returns December 28th. That's not like a huge deal or anything, but it's the only other return that there is because everyone else went to China. So GR3 will be back in Indiana the 28th. That is all I got for the schedule.
Tyreek gets a matchup against his former team to start the first game.
No, December 28th. That's not the first game.
No, they have Memphis.
Tyreek. Yeah. Yes, that would be good.
They play Memphis at home, so not going to Memphis because they play against his former team the first game.
Can't wait to see Mike Conley play again. I'm excited.
Yeah, that should be interesting. I don't know what else. I mean, there's Kyle Quinn's not big enough to matter. They play the Knicks on Halloween, and then they got McDermott, who
– McDermott has former teams.
Yeah, so none of those really matter. I don't know. They play San Antonio again early in the season.
Yep, did last year too.
Which happened – that game where Vic kind of established himself, right? That 3-point shot to win it was sort of when Vic became him. Became
that is weird. Last year in October, they also played Minnesota, the Spurs,
San Antonio, Portland, Cleveland,
Brooklyn, Memphis. Portland. Yeah, that's bizarre.
My guess is because those stadiums probably have the same events year in year, and that's how they schedule them around. Like I don't know what the Pacers host this year, but I'm sure they host a litany of, you know, high school basketball tournaments and college basketball games like the Wooden Classic and then maybe the Big Ten tournament. I don't know exactly, but I'm sure that always influences the schedule about when you play. Like that might be why they have this weird 5-game road stand and 5-game home stand, because like I think in January they might be hosting some college basketball games, and that's why. And
well, that's also March when March Madness goes on, and Banker's Life inevitably will host something.
That March one's probably the Big Ten tournament, I would guess. I don't know exactly.
Yeah, that's who.
Or high school basketball at the same time.
A lot of stuff.
Yeah.
That's it. There's only so much you could say about the schedule that hasn't been said.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's exciting. It'll be fun to watch them on ESPN.
National TV will be cool. Yeah.
I think ESPN provides the best product for the NBA, especially
you when like. But if you like the local announcers, it's good they're not on national TV a ton. So that depends on your feeling.
Well, I think you can watch every game of the local guys anyways. Fox Sports is every game. But I think ESPN, especially ABC with Mike Breen, as the best play-by-play kind of.
Yeah, I love Breen. Awesome. TNT's easily the worst.
Yeah, I don't know. Some of the local ones are not great, but our local one's not bad. Pitch local one is pretty good. I like it. It's just, I just think the ESPN guys, the product too, the whole product of show of the pregame also is just the best of any of them because it has the money behind it.
It is. You want to talk how many wins you think they'll get in that schedule?
Sure. You want to take a break first?
Let's do that. All right. So the mighty Vegas, who is now the mighty Vegas because sports betting is now legal, so they are going to be the mighty capital of the gambling world, has put the Pacers over under for their wins at, drumroll please, 47.5, which is the same as last year.
Well, yeah, same number of wins, not the same over under.
Right. The over under is 17. I can't remember if it was 31.5 or not.
I think it was 30. I don't know. I think it was 31.5. I think
over 15 games higher than last year. So that's pretty cool. But given that they won 48 games last year, I can see how people think that's a bit low.
Yeah, I think we hit this before. They had a lot of luck last year. A lot of things kind of went their way. Think about it.
They were pretty healthy, and they had a lot of great clutch performances, which is just like one shot change its whole game.
Yeah, I mean, I think, right, extended injuries, basically Collison missed 11 games, Vic missed 6, Turner missed 17, Sabonis missed, I want to say 11.
Sabonis? I don't remember how many.
Remember, he was supposed to hit his ankle right, I think, in March and didn't play basically close to the end of the season, I thought.
Thad played every game, or all but one, every game. Bojan played every game except for the last one, too, which I don't even count. No one got hurt in the playoffs. Like, in general, it was a very healthy year. Even the playoffs don't matter for over-unders. And so I feel like that could change. But then you consider, A, their bench is improved, and B, the bench guys are improved, will help when the injuries do happen. You know, you think they can stay afloat for more of them.
Yeah, so the other case, which I actually made in Andy Cornrow's piece, was that, look at it, there are basically 10 guys, if you take out TJ Leaf, basically played 30 or more games at 10 or more minutes. And if you take Lance minutes or replace him with Tyreek's or replace him with or Doug McDermott's, whatever one you want to say is playing small forward at the time, you replace Joe Young's minute and you replace Al Jefferson minutes with the three guys they replaced him with. They should definitely be better because all three of the players they replaced those guys with are much better players who also help you kind of like the 20-something games that Sabonis Turner missed. Now you don't have to play Al Jefferson at all. You play Kyle Quinn, who maybe isn't as good as Sabonis Turner, but the gap between Sabonis and Jefferson is much better than the gap between Sabonis and Al Quinn. And obviously Lance was just terrible, detriment to the whole team. Look at all the net rating stats. So adding Tyreek is a huge plus.
Yeah, I totally agreed on all that. And now, you know, there's no way if they had Tyreek Evans last year, they go 0-7 in the, or 0-whatever in the games Vic doesn't play in. I mean, they were even close in a couple of them for sure. So
they win the Dallas game. That's freaking Christmas. After Christmas, Dallas game.
They win that Wizards game too, the one that John Wall didn't play.
Yeah, the one where, was that when Vic didn't play and Darren Collison didn't play? That one?
Yes. Joe Young started that game, remember? Second half of that game. Yeah, but Joe Young playing well is still like maybe a neutral player.
Yeah, well, we saw Tyler as a starting point guard for a team was pretty good. I mean, like net rating on Memphis was basically a 0.3, but he was the only positive net rating on the entire team. I mean, that shows a lot.
But being positive is crazy good for them.
Yeah, that team was terrible. I mean, you know, like when even like McDermott stats, where McDermott maybe – you think of, like, even if you see him as, like, a marginal player, like, he's not going to play more than 15 minutes a game or doesn't play every game, he helps you, like, in case Bojan misses 5 games, you have a quality replacement where you didn't really have it before. Where you had, luckily, Bojan got hurt last year, but then we had to start Lance, which is just kind of screws the whole lineup if you're starting Lance with Vic and Collison, just kind of screws things up.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I agree with all this. And like you said earlier, I think probably the two guys most likely to miss time next year would be Sabonis and Turner just because – they're big men, and they're more injury prone. And now you have Kylo Quinn, who's like a good basketball player. When Al Jefferson was not a good basketball player, so that alone is a lot of, you know, impact right there. Like, let's we love watching Al be vintage in the post. Like, he was so bad on defense, and there were offensive possessions where like the shot would go up, and he was running across half court on the screen still. So I think KOQ is going to be huge there, and then, you know, maybe Leafs a little better. Aaron Holiday is a better third point guard. Well, I don't know. Actually, Joe Young probably was better last year than Holiday will be this year. But
It won't matter because Tyrese is like a point guard.
Yeah,
he's the third point guard. He's the third guard.
Right. In important moments, he is. Yes, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, if a guy – like, think about it. If – let's say if Collins gets hurt again, Corey Joseph starts, you don't see Aaron Holiday play still. You probably just run it with eight guys or nine guys.
Might play like 5 minutes.
But you're not seeing him play 10 minutes like Joseph. Right.
Play, a young he played like the Leaf role last year. He plays the end of the first quarter and then sits the rest of the game.
Yeah, because Tyree can pretty much – sub in for anybody from shooting from point guard to small forward if needed.
Yes, which is awesome.
Yeah. So the other argument against them winning again 40 games, sort of go back and forth, is how much do you think their older assets depreciated in a sense? Like, you know, last year Collison had a career year, Bogdan had a really good year, and Thad Young had a pretty solid year, I would say. Yeah, again, an average year, but like, are those guys going to kind of depreciate enough where there's not enough gains on the back end, let's say, by the bench.
It's definitely possible, but the odds that all three of them decrease is probably low.
And but two of three, maybe?
And well, they're also on a contract year, which...
Yeah, but Collison and Thad are over 30 now, right?
Yes, they are. They sure are. Oh, no, you're right. They could certainly be worse players. I just think they're going to do everything they can to not be worse players. You know, the odds are against them being, like, substantially worse.
Yeah, no, you're probably right. I have a feeling Collison won't be able to shoot 46%
from three again. No chance. My worry is more on like we saw it took time for teams to be like, oh, this Oladipo guy is really good, and then when the double started coming, like we noticed, you know, and then the playoffs it shut them down sometimes. So now teams know this works, and I mean, Tyreek is supposedly the counter for that, but they have to figure that out still. Like, there's teams know more about them now too, which could hinder them.
No, the real counter for that is Miles Turner is going to get in much – said he says he's going to be in much better shape.
Yeah.
And that's where this whole really thing hinges on, right? At the end of the day, they're going to win more games if Miles Turner's a better player.
Yeah. Yeah,
so that's really where everything else is really on the margins. It's like they're winning 46 and 50 games. But Miles Turner's where if he is really – has like a huge leap, they can win 55 or 60 games easily. And if he's really, really bad, they could win 40 games.
Right. Well,
like that's really not 40. That's probably too low. But I
totally agree. That gives him two All-Stars basically if he's really good. So,
yeah,
no, I would like to talk about the Ringer article today. While I just say that says Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart are more likely Eastern Conference All-Stars than Andre Drummond. Very interesting. Anyway,
that they list what Turner's dark horse All-Star candidate too. There,
dark horse All-Star candidate behind Jaylen Brown and Marcus Smart. Anyway.
I mean, I think the in shape thing is a kind of a big deal for Turner because if you watched him last year, he looked like I thought Tom Stoddard looked a little bit like I thought he looked stronger, but he also looked a little bit bigger, like not as always just pure muscle. And I think that's gonna be better for him this year.
It will be. I hope it is. That would be again Tua having another All Star, very close to All Star, is just enormous for team building.
Yeah, just a guy that like can consistently make a shot. I mean, like, I'm talking about just like if Vic is double team, turn, drain to three or a long two. Just doing that consistently. That ends up beating the team, the double team, and forces them to do other things. But I also think during the regular season, the double teams won't be as effective because you won't be able to plan as much. It's just the players are a whole different animal in the regular season sometimes.
I agree.
Get more coaching.
I agree with all of that. Your official prediction. For the over-under, Adam. Over or under?
They beat it by half a game.
I also was going to say 48. That's so funny.
I mean, the thing is, last year they could have won 50. Maybe they should have won 50. They beat Atlanta and they beat Dallas that February stretch. But I don't know. It will also come down to, like, are they going to be in contention the last two games of the season or not? Or where, you know, where's everybody else at? And will they need to get to 48 wins? Or can they sit at 46 and still be the same seed kind of thing?
Right. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was saying, like, if Washington has a bad year again, and then you throw in, like, if all those teams are sitting the same 43 mark that sat there last year, and they're sitting at 46 with three games left, but they're locked into the four seed, they might end up, you know, 46 and what's it, 36 is the record when you get that?
Yeah, that's fine.
That's what could happen. But, like, if they're not, they're in contention, they might be able to get to 50 because they're going to try.
Right. Yes. Your magic number of 50, that doesn't make any actual bearing on the season.
Yeah, like, right, if they had tried last year, they should have won 49 games, right? They should have won the last game. Yeah. It would have beat Charlotte. So, that's the look at it.
Can we talk about this, though? I guess this isn't a big deal, but, like, I keep seeing people, like, Anything less than 50 is a failure. Like, that's a dangerous mindset to me.
I would say anything less than a 4 seed is a failure, not 50 wins. I wouldn't put a win on it.
Yeah, that, well, if they have a really good year, but like Milwaukee also blows up, I wouldn't say not getting the 4 seed is a failure.
Well, that should put them at the, well, no. Yeah, I guess anything below the 4 or 5 matchup is probably a failure.
Yes, yes.
Because they should be better than Washington. They should be better than Miami. They should be better than any. I'm trying to think what else team we can be for that.
Like Milwaukee is like a maybe they're better, and Washington's like a, there's a small chance if everything works out for them they're better. So like 6 would suck, but isn't out of the realm of possibility. 5 is like that kind of sucks, but like okay, the Bucks are really good, and then 4 is like all right, that was a good year, good job.
Yeah, the real question is how many times this year. Over under on, let's say, 10 times during the Philly Pacers broadcast, will that announcer say, these two teams built their teams different ways and got to the same point? Or something along those lines, like one tanked the whole way, one never got below 35 wins, I think, what the Pacers were. But they're still both, they're both here now. Like, that's, we're going to hear that. That's going to be a big story on ESPN to sell those games.
It's going to drive me crazy. Hey, guys, who cares how your team got good? Who cares? Your team is good. Who cares?
I mean, it's interesting fact, but it doesn't mean said 15 times, which it will be.
It doesn't need said 2 times. Wow, look at that. They took different strategies, and they both worked. Look at them go. They're playing a real sport out there. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, and the Pacers end up starting off really well, too. I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of become ESPN's kind of Cinderella. The way kind of Utah was last year for NBA, fans were like, they were kind of like, oh, this team's actually really, really good kind of thing. And they could, because they challenged, that could happen to the Pacers, too, and that might not be a great thing.
I'm excited to watch Utah again. Unrelated note. But yeah, I agree with you there, especially because they're on ESPN 8 times. 8, yes, 8 times.
Well, and because there's sort of a – there's a very easy storyline to build off.
Yeah.
Paul Jordan get better kind of thing. Oladipo and I don't know, all this stuff.
Right. There. And they play the next 2 of those ESPN games. So a lot of people will watch the Hicks versus Knicks, and the Pacers should kick their ass both times. So.
Yeah, because no Porzingis.
Yeah, remember the game they had no Porzingis last year, and I said, they're going to win by 30, and then they won by 30.
I thought they went by like 19 because they stopped trying.
Oh, yeah. They were up 30 in the fourth and they put in like
Joe Young, EJ Nabogo, TJ Lee. Maybe Josh Everson was in there for a little bit.
Damian Wilkins was in that game.
Yeah.
Good time.
Yeah. I will say it's hard to predict which game's going to blow out or not, but
right.
The schedule does, like we were talking about, it does seem favorable that they're like, there's no ridiculous pitfalls that could. From them getting to 48 wins again.
Yes, yes. Hey, and we know the schedule. You can expect many more live appearances from Adam and Tony in the fourth quarter of games.
Oh, yeah. A lot more podcasts. We're going to have to get into that flow eventually.
But and it's only hard.
Yeah. Because we didn't really, it took us till about November we started doing podcasts pretty much every day on it. We have to be on together every day for every game.
Good times we had that Google Doc we were actually trying to keep up with.
Yeah, then it became like a week-by-week thing. Became like it's Sunday. We have to plan out the next – okay, we'll just do it like Thursday and we'll figure it out Friday.
Man, no one really cares, but this is a quality remedy.
But maybe we should do – let's hear from fans. Maybe we should do almost every game we can fourth quarters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Everybody likes – I've not heard one person who doesn't like those.
Or at least last 6 minutes, I guess. Maybe not the whole fourth quarter.
Those of you that are new to the show in the summer, way too late in the year, like probably March, we decided that it'd be cool to record live in the fourth quarter of close games, and it's super fun, and it sounds awesome when we produce it, so get ready for those. They're cool.
Yeah, especially once we figure out they're playing, like, you know, 3-point games literally every game, it felt like.
Yeah, I feel like every time we said we're going to do one, we ended up having to do one, so.
Yeah, the one I think we missed a good opportunity to do was that Denver one. December. We even live on that one. That would have been crazy.
Awesome. That overtime game. For those of you that don't remember, that was Vic's 46-pointer, right?
47, 8 points, all 8 points. Or no, 6 of the last 8 points plus the stuff the backboard, the fad.
Gosh, nuts.
That was a nuts. That was a nuts game.
Anything you would like to promote? Because I know you had a piece come out yesterday before we wrap up.
We're going to do a fan podcast on Friday, recording that for this show.
We are going to have a fan podcast on Friday. I just almost said pan podcast, which will be fun. And we already have people for next week and probably the week after, so appreciate you guys doing that. We're going to have to cut it off soon, though, because before we know it, preseason will be here and we'll be out of time.
And guys, if you want to be on the show, you can tweet us, but just DM us. It's so much easier. Just DM us.
Me, it is a lot easier to DM.
DM me at FreedomAdam5, Tony at TeastNBA, or our show at Locked On Pacers. Any of those, DM any of those accounts, you'll get a response probably. You will get a response, and it'll be much easier to keep track of who to have on.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And they're really fun, and I guarantee Fridays is fun, and I guarantee next week is fun. And I saw an account reply to the podcast on Twitter talking about bringing back the Kentucky Colonels. So we're bringing together people who are fans of the Kentucky Colonels and the ABA. So these fan shows are doing great. I'm glad you guys like them.
Yeah, I think they're a good way for our August content.
That too.
No, it's good. Yeah, August is sort of like we were talking before the show. August is just such a dead sports month, Pacers wise, NBA wise. It's just baseball. There's no NFL. I mean, it's just like just slugging through to the end of August before we get some at least the NFL season soon.
I will close with a one sentence rant, if you'll let me.
Go ahead.
We know the Pacers regular season schedule, and we don't know the Pacers preseason schedule. That is stupid. That is so stupid.
Are you going to go to the game? They play against some like European or Israeli team again?
I might do some breaking news here, Adam.
What?
The Pacers will probably not be having a home preseason game this year.
Oh, why not?
I don't know, but a person on Twitter who did not want me to quote tweet them, but they are on public, so you could probably find it very easily, who works for the team said they did not tell the game ops people to be prepared for a game until the regular season started.
Oh, interesting. Must have something scheduled in October.
Yeah.
Maybe some kind of event. You go online, probably a concert scheduled that week before. Wasn't there a concert last year that screwed it up too?
And we already know three of their games, which I think everybody and their mother wrote about it. Oh, we know all their games. Okay, never mind. I didn't see this Houston one got put out. So they play Houston on October 4th in Houston. They play Memphis in Memphis on the 6th. They play Cleveland in Cleveland on the 8th. And they play Chicago in Chicago on the 10th. There's their preseason schedule done. I'm going to write an article about that before the Pacers even release the schedule.
All right, nice.
Anyway, good rant and good
ending. Yeah, we'll miss. Ignore that last five minutes. Maybe two minutes.
Oh, man. All right. Yeah, thank you guys for tuning in today. Stay tuned for the fan show on Friday, which Adam's going to go record in 6 minutes. So that's exciting. Thanks for listening to this episode. We'll have more fan shows and stuff next week, and see you guys next time.